the people that brought you the Ultimate Warrior beating Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6 present WWE Studios Leprechaun Origins. It's Shocktober, and I'm not Dan McCoy.
Yeah, that was good.
Let's all try to be respectful. This is a guest space. We're guests here.
Okay. I took my shoes off in the Japanese style before I really made myself comfortable, but I am going to get deep in those butt divots in the couch. I'm going to really explore the space.
I use the guest towels.
Why are you guys doing jokes? This isn't even the show.
Okay.
I haven't started the show yet. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Flop House. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Travis McElroy.
I'm Griffin McElroy.
And I'm Clint McElroy.
We're not usually here.
Sometimes we are. I mean, we're always here. We're always a grim specter hanging out in the background.
Imagine if for several many years, like 18 years, you've been watching the Flophouse from a single camera. The camera finally, after all these years, pans to the right, and there's a reveal that we have been sitting on a slightly larger couch this entire time.
Recording our own podcast called The Slop House, which was the original name of The Adventure Zone, which is the podcast that we have switched with this week.
Yeah, so if you would rather just hear Dan and Stuart and Elliot, I do not blame you. They were playing D&D. Just switch the channel on your podcast tuner over to The Adventure Zone, which is our D&D podcast, and you can listen to them play D&D, which I honestly wish I was listening to right now. So I, you know, there's no hard feelings.
They're over there.
We are going to do our best. Like, let's be clear here. I think guys might like this episode.
It's just hard for me to focus on the episode when I'm worried about what those three are doing to my intellectual property over there.
Oh yeah, good point.
They could be killing. They could be killing all of your characters off, and then where would we be?
You can't kill Magnus.
I guess that's true. What movie did we watch?
Is there show canon? Griffin, have you established?
I told them to go nuts, go wild, do what they want to do, explore the space.
Hey, let's talk about this movie that we watched.
Okay.
So we watched Leprechaun Origins from WWE Studios. I read somewhere that it's been 13 years since the last Leprechaun movie, that this was a reimagining.
It hadn't been that long. It was Leprechaun
Back to the Hood.
Was 2004, right?
Yeah. So it's been a crisp 11 years, and it should have stayed dead. We shouldn't have come back.
Or at least if it was not going to stay dead, it should have brought the one that was Leprechaun back to life.
Warwick Davis.
I was desperately disappointed that it was not anything like the other Leprechaun movies.
Well, that's the thing. The president of WWE Studios did all these interviews back in 2014. Because he was like, guys, good news. We got Hornswoggle, and he's finally gonna fucking get the respect that he deserves. And on the silver screen, we got Hornswoggle. Guys, we got Hornswoggle.
We booked him, folks. We did it.
We booked Hornswoggle. But this isn't your dad's Leprechaun. You remember how the old Leprechauns were a fun murder romp?
Yeah, there was a lot of humor.
It was a weird, like, you know, very B-movie horror movie.
Oh, I think you're being generous with,
with the B. Yeah, it was a J-movie. He fucking, Warwick Davis kills somebody with a pogo stick. He jumps on a chest with a pogo stick and kills a man.
Leprechaun Takes Japan was a J-movie. Produced there and directed there.
And then there was the K-drama series. Leprechaun Grocer, and that was just about a grocery store, and the two clerks loved each other very much, but also Warwick Davis was there, and he sometimes killed people in fun ways.
We've got a lot of plot, by which I mean very, very little to get through, so let's start.
I'm trying to pad it, because we could record this. This could be a 15-minute record, because we could say, here's the plot of Leprechaun Origins. People walk around slowly, and then somebody gets horrifically murdered.
And then we laugh at weird things. They laugh at every revelation.
We could just cut and paste that six times over, because that's all this movie is fucking people walking slow.
I know Travis took notes.
Yes.
I would like to hear Dad's synopsis, and Travis, you fill in as needed. okay? Because I think it's going to be pretty general.
Okay.
Is that okay with you, Travis?
Yes, but if he starts to diverge too much, I'm going to jump in and take over.
That's
so that we don't have a three-hour-long episode.
Okay, Dad, give me the plot overview of the film Leprechaun Origins starring Hornswoggle.
It starts in Ireland. Surprise, surprise. And the first thing we see is an attractive young couple, and they're running through weeds. For some insane reason, nobody in horror movies can run through weeds without falling down.
Or they could be running through a white room. They could be running through a soundstage that is completely featureless, and then they would find some sort of ridge on the atomic level to trip over.
So we start off.
My favorite moment in that as they're running through the tall grass is at one point, for no reason, the female says, "Stop!" And they stop running.
The female? What are you, a Ferengi?
The female of the species.
The female of the species.
She wears clothes?
Why?
Why
do you allow this, Earthman?
So then they go running through...
You've been disrespected.
The most overgrown cemetery in history.
Yeah.
It doesn't have weeds. It has trees.
Well, what are they going to do? You can't get a fucking lawn guy in there. He'll be devoured by the Hornswoggle.
And then they steal from Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
They steal from the raptors in the weeds.
One of maybe 60 movies that Leprechaun Origins just straight up just lifts from, unapologetically.
And let me say here, just a spoiler alert, this 30-second opening tells as much story as the rest of the movie put together.
And it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
It also starts a theme that we see continue throughout Leprechaun Origins, which is a very, very, very overused horror setup that you expect, like, just statistically will be subverted in some way, and then it is not.
It is exactly the biggest ripoff plot-wise.
I made the point to Rachel. It is basically like four high school students saw the first two-thirds of Cabin in the Woods and then tried to recreate it using props and costumes.
There's literally a line in this movie where someone goes, "It's a cabin in the woods."
Yeah.
And they might as well have just, like, turned towards the camera and stared at it for, like, 5 minutes.
And here's Bradley Whitford. He's the knockoff Bradley Whitford, and we got him in this one.
So the two hot kids get dragged into the woods and chomped or whatever.
That was when the shine came right off the old leprechaun apple for me, because you saw a bloody hand with fingers that had been bitten off. It's like,
well,
that's not really
we
the
to
old leprechaun.
They were bitten off because he was wearing a gold ring, and these fools love gold.
As
we later learn, poorly.
Sure.
So then we encounter our four main characters. Now, you never do learn the names of two of them.
Sophie, Ben, Jenny, and David.
One is Sophie, and I got that 45 minutes in.
Yeah. And there's a strong correlation between the Scooby Gang. Just without Scooby.
If the Scooby Gang fucking despised each other. Yeah. If the Scooby Gang had no, like, semblance of care for the well-being of each other.
Yeah. Not even amongst the couples.
Oh, my God. They're the worst dysfunctional couples in history.
Yeah.
Sophie is the correlation with Velma. She's like a sexy Velma.
So, a Velma.
Yeah, just a Velma. You're being redundant.
Oh, that's true.
Just
And then Jenny is the Daphne.
She's the rebellious Daphne.
Right. And then you have Ben, who is the non-roided out Fred.
Ben is nobody. Ben is nothing.
Ben is a shade of a man. I think his T levels are real low.
Yeah, he seems to fade. If you don't look at him directly, he becomes translucent. He's a non-presence.
And then you have Dave, who is Shaggy.
Who is the greatest man alive.
Yeah. David, the unkillable.
You know he's cool because he chews gum and he doesn't like sleeves.
Yeah,
I love Dave. Dave has my favorite moment in the whole movie, and it comes in the first 5 seconds.
What is it?
It's they're riding in the chicken truck, and at one point Dave just goes, "Chicken." And it made me laugh so hard. And it was like 3 seconds of the movie, and it was easily my favorite moment.
Well, they ride in, and all of a sudden, the guy who's driving the truck, they're on this walkabout, a day trip in Ireland.
Which, this sales pitch for this fucking walkabout is the craziest thing I've ever heard. These are four, like, 20-somethings in Ireland on a trip, and this strange Irish man... Oh, Sophie is really into getting her master's in history or something like
well,
that?
Well, she's sort of into it.
Yeah.
So of course she can read Celtic languages,
of course. Of course, and it's established when she says, I don't think I'm actually going to go get my master's for history. And Jenny says, you've wanted to get your master's in history since you were two. Yeah. What a fucking... crazy aspiration.
So they hate each other.
They hate each other.
Also, they hate everything they're doing.
And,
like,
and so
everything they do is like, oh, we found a tavern.
But they were psyched to go on a 7-hour hike to see some cool rocks. These aren't human beings. Nobody gets psyched to see for a 7-hour walk to see some dope ass old Irish rocks.
The one girl doesn't even have a backpack.
Yeah. They don't have any food. They don't have any clothes.
She's got a messenger bag.
Yeah.
Uncle Fester pulls the truck over and they jump out of it.
He won't go
any farther. Alarm bells there.
This is where we meet Sad Son, my favorite character in the movie. Sad Son, the constantly crying Irish boy.
Before they even get there, when they get dumped right there in the field, they look over and see this spooky Duck Dynasty looking guy.
Yeah.
And there's this
never referenced zoom,
and never see up. Him again.
He's just a weird old Santa with a skinny. He looked like Santa when he stopped eating, when he got really depressed, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, just holding a shotgun and staring at them.
So,
and
Dad, I want you guys to know, to Dad's point, I also wrote down, oh shit, Duck Dynasty.
Okay. I think you guys maybe missed out on something. That was not a real man. That was a scare horn swoggle. And you put those out in your fields. You put those out in your fields of, oh, is it probably barley?
Scare swoggle.
You put that out in the fields, and your scare swoggle is going to keep the horn swoggles away. Because otherwise, some 20-somethings are going to get absolutely
annihilated. We have made it 3 minutes into this film, and it sucks.
So they head into town, and this is where we get the first inkling of the directorial majesty that is Zach Lipovsky. They walk up to this pub, whatever it is, and all four of them do the exact same move. They take two steps forward, they turn back and face the camera, and take two steps back. It's all four of them do the exact
like synchronized.
It's like choreography or synchronized swimming.
They look down, they find their marks on the floor.
Right.
Oh my gosh, it was horrible. So then they go into this this tavern, which is full of the creepiest damn people that have ever lived.
Yeah.
And let me stress here, it is literally in the middle of nowhere, and there's 50, 60 patrons in this bar at what seems to be 2:00 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's like banging. Like, they didn't spend money on anything. They got 60 extras for this one scene.
This tavern is popping off.
Only two of which we ever see again.
Right, correct. Yeah.
But they're in this pub for like 20 seconds, and they're already at each other's throats.
Yeah, they hate each other's guts.
Ben, the non-roided out, see-through
the
Fred.
Ghost. Yeah. Just the fucking worst dude.
Yeah, just the worst dude.
Within 20 seconds, he and Sophie are fighting. The two couples are pissed at each other. And within 30 seconds, a complete stranger talks them into heading out into the wilderness with him.
Okay, let me break this scene down super quick. An old Irishman hears their conversation, turns around, is like, oh, you like old shit, huh? I know one thing that's really old. And she was like, it's not in the guidebook. He's like, it's the oldest thing. It's the cradle of the Celtic civilization. And he's like, she's like, well, it's not my guidebook. He's like, well, you won't find this in any of your books. That's insane. Do you realize how insane that sounds, that this is like the oldest thing in Ireland, and like, it's not in any books. And then
it's not in any books because you have to walk 7 fucking hours
to see
it.
That's the cherry. That's the cherry. He said, well, it's a 7-hour hike. Do you know, like, if I heard they hear 7-hour hike and don't immediately like upturn their table and walk out.
Because, okay, logically, he then says, if you spend the night, set off in the morning – you could be back by tomorrow evening. That's 7 hours there, 7 hours back. You got about 10 seconds to enjoy the cradle of Celtic civilization before you have to head back, because it's going to be midnight by the time you
We have to go forward. They travel to this cabin.
So they jump in the back and they're drinking beer and
creepy
getting
Irish son.
Yeah, crying son. And he's all unhappy, and the dad has a gold Rolex, which, gosh, no way that's going to figure into the "quote unquote" plot.
Can we talk about? Can we talk about the way that gold is expressed in this movie? Because traditionally, leprechauns, watches, earrings, tongue rings, not their game. Usually, it's just sort of coins.
Yeah, just like mainly just.
Oh, follow the rainbow to my pot of watches. What?
Look at me, tongue stud collection.
Probably the most insane thing about the watch is that let me just flash forward in case you haven't already pieced this together. He's luring them into the woods to let the leprechaun kill them. The crazy thing about that is he uses the watch as like an indicator. It's like a sock on the door dorm room.
I thought it was more like chum. He was chumming the water.
He was chumming the water. But here's the crazy part. Before he chums the water by putting a gold watch outside the sacrifice house for these teens, he wears it on his fucking wrist. He drives into the heart of leprechaun country wearing this solely so it could be established as something that is in the plot.
Right.
And you can see it again. But he's wearing it,
but that's
in the place he knows the leprechaun lives.
That is sentimentality. They are sacrificing 20-somethings to the leprechaun because they took gold from the leprechaun, and instead of just giving it back, which was enough to placate Warwick Davis, they decide that, no, I love my watch too much, so I'm going to let these 20-somethings get absolutely murdered. Of course, every time you do this transaction, apparently you lose a piece of gold using it as chum. So he was wearing the watch as a last memory, watch, you've served me well over the years.
That's the VIG.
Yeah.
Extra piece of gold. So they go up to this cabin, and they go past the nice cabin, and they go to the crummy cabin, which looked exactly the same as the nice cabin, except the crummy cabin has locks on the outside of the door, and these four dumbasses do not pick up on that.
Well, and you can't. You get my favorite cry son moment. You got to prevent break-ins.
Oh, from who?
You have to prevent breakouts, because that's not how locks work. They go on the inside of doors.
So they go into this cabin, which apparently, to us, only has the one door. And immediately, being young, vibrant, three of them people, they immediately go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Where
Ben, please don't skip over my second favorite dude line. Whatever Shaggy's line was.
David.
We got a queen size!
That is the button. For a very long establishing scene, walking around, there's a creepy fucking cabin. No Wi-Fi, no electricity, don't even worry about it. We got a queen size! Full-blown Oprah vibrato.
But they have these lanterns that click on immediately.
Yeah.
He's and also got, no food. They're planning a 14-hour round-trip hike the next day.
In the Leprechauniverse, the only thing that needs to eat food for nutrients and subsistence is the hornswoggle.
They literally walk out of the bar and get into a truck and go on a 14-hour hike. The wildest thing about the stupid cabin sequence is, first off, I should mention, for some reason they have a six-pack of Guinness in a wooden milk crate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a wooden...
Or a shoe shine.
Oh, it was me grandpappy's beer crate.
Yeah. They're in the cabin and night falls, and Jennifer, is that the one that's not
Jenny.
Sophie? Jenny sees a shape moving outside.
Oh, wait, you skipped over the whole part. Both women
try to get down.
The two dudes.
Yeah, One dude falls asleep, and the other dude's like...
He's just not interested.
And Ben might as well have turned to her and said, I hate you.
I hate your history-loving guts. Ben is a cuckold. I'm over-talking about him.
And then Jen and Dave, who haven't been able to keep their freaking hands off each other for the first 20 minutes of the movie, He's out.
Yeah,
he's
but in Dave's defense, he did just drink a six-pack of Guinness without eating a fucking thing for days.
He might be dead in that scene.
Yeah, So anyway, night falls, Jenny sees the a shape moving outside, and she gets spooked, right? She yells for Dave. Dave says, and I wrote this line down verbatim because it was so awesome. He says, "That's why they call it the woods, babe. Lions and tigers and chickens and shit." What? Okay. That's not why they call it the woods.
There's tigers in them. They're Irish woods.
There's and chickens is
and
not
that's why they
that
call
thing.
It the woods.
Yeah.
What should we call this thing? Well, it's got tigers and lions and shit in it. How about the woods?
So this is our first leprechaun interaction. He makes his way into the house. Oh, they realize that the doors are locked from the outside. Now they get it. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. And he has the line. They're going to sacrifice us to the leprechaun.
No, that doesn't come until later. They don't understand. They just see a pasty white hornswoggle jump into the room. A wild hornswoggle attacks.
Here's the thing. They're reestablishing this when the leprechaun runs past the window. That's as big a reveal as we're going to get practically through the whole movie.
For a very long time. Terrible.
They never show it.
Can we talk about Hornswoggle? I don't know how familiar you guys are with the WWE Studios brand, but the way that this whole fucking thing works, first of all, WWE Studios is like if people from WWE Studios watched the recent sci-fi originals and said, what if we did that, but not fun? Like, what if we did that, but we took all sort of acknowledgement of how bad this movie is going to be and any sort of fun in the writing out of it.
Why is WWE Studios not more fun? I thought for sure that would be a brand associated with fun.
It's perplexing, right? But what's more perplexing is typically how it works, except for there was The Call with Halle Berry and Abigail Breslin, neither of which are WWE superstars, unless Abigail Breslin is Sin Cara.
Hornswoggle.
We don't know what's going on underneath Sin Cara's mask. Might be Abigail Breslin in there. But typically how it works is you get See No Evil starring Kane. You get a WWE superstar and they are the pillar of the cast of the movie.
Well,
you get the Marine.
John Cena and the Marine.
Right.
Yeah, and they made four of those.
Yeah, and in the recent ones it's The Miz in the Marine. And this time you get Hornswoggle, who's a WWE superstar. I'm a fairly recent WWE convert, so I missed most of the Hornswoggle dynasty.
But I saw one pretty crazy his top 10 moments, okay?
He's awesome. Yeah.
He leaps out from under the stage and tackles a wrestler. I can't remember which one.
The tadpole splash is his signature move. That's true. It's awesome. He's fucking awesome.
But then the announcers, every word out of their mouth is, "What is that thing? It's attacking him. What is that thing?"
As if they'd never seen a little person
before. It's a little person.
Right, exactly.
Sir, it's a little person.
Right.
It's not an it.
He also had some of the best WWE plot lines forever. He for a long time, he was sort of the manager of a super big Irish man, and he was a leprechaun, and that's sort of how the WWE works sometimes. But then there was a plot line where he was Vince McMahon's illegitimate son.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a plot line where he was the shadow ruler of the WWE, and nobody knew his true identity. His name is Hornswoggle, and he's awesome. And in this movie, he's fucking Voldemort. He's Voldemort with a gory
face.
He's
Voldemort if he had acid thrown on him and then was dipped in wax.
He's an acid burned Voldemort. It could have been fucking anybody playing the leprechaun. You got Hornswoggle. It could have been Andy Serkis in there.
It could have been Hulk Hogan. It could have been Haystack Muldoon.
Okay, so if you've ever played a video game and gone into a cave level, and every video game that has a cave level has this, you'll hear skittering around, oh gosh, what is that? The first thing that jumps out at you and you hit it with your sword once and it dies, that's what the leprechaun is in this movie. You expect, in order for them to be this to be a palpable threat, you would need thousands of them. As they in the first encounter with the leprechaun, they throw a bed on him,
and that's a solid 5 minutes struggle for this
five
leprechaun.
Minutes, not a bed. Oh, you found me one weakness.
And yet later, it can bash in doors,
jump through a wall.
Yeah, well, beds are their weakness. Leprechauns are afraid of sleeping.
So they all come out, and at one point,
we get to see our first bit of violence towards one of our four main people, and that is the leprechaun being a real dick and pulling her earring earlobe.
Right out of
her. Poor Jenny.
Yeah, she gets a rough
ride. The two horny people, her and Shaggy,
yeah.
they get take all kinds of abuse. Hornswoggle reaches in, plucks her earring out of her ear, and everybody starts screaming.
Exactly.
Every move, every quote-unquote scare this movie has is the exact same thing. It's somebody doing something. It's Mark Kermode, a film critic in the UK I listen to. He calls it quiet, 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 bang. That's the only scares that this movie has is quiet, quiet, quiet.
Except in Leprechaun Origins, they did like a really clever twist on it, and that is quiet, 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 quiet. This movie is people walking around corners at -2 miles an hour. The pacing in this movie is a disaster. And then there's like
the pacing in this episode is a disaster. Let's see if we can move along.
Okay, fine.
The leprechaun starts chasing him around.
They flip a bed on him, and
this camera. They throw. Yeah, and then they just. And then of course, smart. Sophie realizes that the secret passage that the monster used to come through the fireplace is ajar. So they start heading out.
How would he fit in a jar?
Oh, it's wide open. They run out.
David gets his leg ripped.
Now, please, let me have this one.
Yeah.
The leprechaun rips David's leg open to the bone and beyond. Basically rips the first third of his leg off.
He's got a leg now.
And yet, for the next 20 minutes, he's running on it.
Yeah, he's
blood. He hobbles a little bit.
Yeah, this
doesn't go into shock.
This is where we start to realize the true nature of this group of quote unquote friends. First of all, his leg wound is basically a honey ham jammed up in some jeans.
Yeah.
So they had some fun with those practical effects. And then they all start running, and nobody's helping David. David's up and about, which is impressive because he's like permanently just maimed, but he's doing okay. Not as good as the rest of the group, who just book it and nobody helps him at all.
And there's a moment where he goes down, and it's illustrated like you watch Ben and Jen both go, "Well, fuck Dave," and keep running.
And Ben looks at him, takes off, and then at least Sophie goes back to help him.
Yes.
Yeah. You definitely see the moment where she's like,
well, he's kind of a shit.
I do hate Dave.
So from that point on, you know that she's the last girl. You know,
she's the survivor, the Ripley.
Right. So
then they get into the farmhouse.
I love how they get into the farmhouse. The big saving grace is they run against the door so many times, the spare key falls out of the jam.
Yeah.
And then they proceed to do the worst search for a phone I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They flip on the lights and they say, "We need to, like, let's look for a phone." Then they just mill in a circle for a second.
It is the most insane. Like, you know how in movies you have in horror movies you have the one person who sort of knows what's going on that has to explain the plot? Leprechaun Origins didn't have time nor the budget for that sort of thing. So here's the literal sequence of events. Here's what they know, right? They've been attacked by a weird monster.
Clearly Hornswoggle. I could identify him by sight. Yeah.
They've been attacked by a weird monster. They have escaped to a second house. That is all they know. From that point, they go to look for a phone somewhere in this house. And in the search for the phone, they find – I swear to God I'm not making this up. They find a book that has a picture of the rock they saw earlier and the symbols on the rock – translate to leprechaun, and from that
there's a map that shows the stones that they drove by earlier, and not the history buff, but Ginny says that looks like some sort of ancient warding barrier. Like, whoa, Ginny from downtown!
And the book is open to the right page.
To the page! Well, here's what we didn't know. Sophie is a history major, but Jen is deep into the dark arts.
Yeah, exactly. Super,
and from that...
She just graduated from Hogwarts.
From those two pieces of information, they extrapolate that they are being hunted by a leprechaun that they were supposed to be sacrificed to, and if they can get outside of the stone barrier, then they'll be safe. That is an insane journey to take mentally. That is a crazy, crazy path for them to walk.
I have an explanation, though.
Okay.
Everybody in this cast, all the way down, has been on the show Supernatural.
Oh, so they have...
Every one of them, and this is not a joke, every single one of them have played a character on Supernatural.
Oh, really?
So obviously, this is and either that or the casting director is the same casting director that worked for Supernatural.
I know four pretty looking people.
But it goes like all the way to like Impaled Ian and Hamish the
Dad. Sure.
And every one of them have been on Supernatural. So maybe that explains it.
Throughout this sequence where they're learning about the Leprechaun's origins, you get a little bit more backstory on Dad and Crying Son. Crying Son doesn't want to kill 20-somethings anymore.
Mm-mm.
Crying
no,
Son's
not
position.
Four of them. Not
yeah, yeah.
four of
not
them.
Four,
he has a real issue with the number four. If it was one or two, he'd probably be okay with it.
And I call him Crying Son because he literally cries in every scene.
he's sad for the whole movie.
He's sad a lot.
Sad Donald Logue is really sad.
He really does look like Donald Logue.
Here's the one of the wilder sort of crazy plot points, the guys who sacrificed the teens come back with another guy in the middle of the night after they kind of guess that he's probably done murdering them. And goes,
he looks at his watch and goes, that should be enough time.
That should be enough time.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have his watch anymore because he used it as
the other guy. No, I mean, yeah, the other guy's like, Ian checks his watch.
That should be enough time.
That's my favorite line in the movie, by the way, is how long have we been out here? I seem to have misplaced my watch. That's pretty good.
It's the closest they get to an actual. Anyway, they show back up, like, cutting it, my friends, quite close to when you think, here's the thing, they're back there to clean up the abandoned cabin that they can lock from the outside.
And we know because they walk up to the cabin with mops and cleaning supplies. So,
hey, dogs, that shit locks from the outside. It could probably wait. Your fucking Merry Maids bullshit could probably wait until the morning, my dudes, when the definite leprechaun will not be there.
Their logic is so completely flawed because the panic when they reach the cabin and find not them dead is it hasn't eaten. But then we see over the next hour the leprechaun, the hornswoggle, consume four people and still want to kill.
Yeah, so, the first person he kills is the guy that they brought with him named Ian. He's the first person he kills, and he leaves him untouched. Just murdered and not eaten, apparently because he likes to fuck with people's heads.
Yeah. The Hornswoggle's a genuine bastard.
But we've been informed that it's gold that drives him.
Yeah. And
or maybe eating people.
Yeah, like, it's not or established. Or maybe just sort of tearing the flesh.
So the Americans escape.
I want to point out something. When they're in the basement and they find the book and they find the map, this is where they blew all of their props budget. There's glasses, there's passports, there are cell phones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they never even look at
those. Let's find phones. Well, here's a pile of 60 phones. No, not those. Hey, I found
not
another
those
60 phones.
Are you kidding me? Data roaming in Ireland?
No way.
And some of the worst editing ever. And this is the first indication we get. This movie was not sponsored by the the Irish shotgun camera.
Or anybody, because they could have been like, here's 60 amazing T-Mobile cell phones. Okay, let's move forward. We need to start getting some deaths.
Okay.
I want to hit on one last thing.
Please.
It's very short. In this moment, so crying Donald Logue comes downstairs hunting for them in the basement. And he points his flashlight and then moves it 6 inches to the left and is surprised to see them.
Yeah.
Like, he's looking over here and he's just like, oh, there you
That's
are.
Great.
They're
and
there.
And then two of them are holding shotguns on them and there's a standoff because, well, the other four have a pipe.
Oh.
A pick.
A broom. Absolutely, Father, you've touched on another key point. No one in this movie, specifically these four teens, have zero respect or fear of guns.
Yeah. No, they're useless.
There's two moments where the first one is she stands off with a guy pointing a shotgun directly at her with an axe. Like, well, it's a Mexican standoff, I guess.
Yep.
It is not.
No,
it is not. That man has a shotgun. Your work here is done. The next, like 5 minutes later, they get caught by Let's just skip ahead of this.
Yeah,
okay?
please.
They get caught back up by the guys who are going to sacrifice them. And at this moment, they have two shotguns pointed at them. And David hands the dipshit boyfriend,
covertly hands him a pipe.
Yeah.
As though now the worm has turned.
Like a plumbing pipe, yeah. Not a puff puff
yeah,
pipe.
Yeah, like a pipe, like, here you go. If I would have been the boring guy, I would have handed that right back to my friend.
And I would have handed it to the shotgun people. Yeah. Here you go. My boy was trying to get me to hit you, but I respect your power.
Yeah.
Well, we've had our first death. Ian has been impaled on
something. Yeah, Ian got caught. They get all tied up to some trees.
And they're tied up to four trees with bling all over them when they come to. They've had gold bling put all over them. And so the leprechaun comes up. The same creature that chased them all through a cabin walks up to them tied to trees and can't close the deal.
Just can't. Nope, just sort of stands there.
And hates Jenny so
just
much.
Just really, I can't stress this enough. The hornswoggle.
There are people wearing huge gold necklaces, and there's like gold all over these people. And he's like, no, what I want is that tongue stuff.
Well, you know what?
Which we have never seen before.
Yeah, it was not established.
No.
I think that was less his taste for gold, and more when he reached into her mouth and then split her tongue in twain pulling out the tongue stud. I think that was him, like, in his hornswoggle head. He was saying, like, oh sweetie, it's not 2007 anymore. Nobody's doing this. Let me just get this out of here for you.
So he bifurcates her tongue and then doesn't eat her, doesn't kill her, but moves over to Shaggy. And the thing that amazed me about this scene is all four of them are screaming insanely.
Yeah.
And that seems to be holding him off.
Yeah. Like he's not.
Could you keep it down? It's worth explaining super quick because I think it's been established at this point. What happened is the people in this village mined a cave that they found for gold, and by which they mean they stole the leprechaun's gold. So their deal was, rather than just returning the gold, because they apparently are not going to do that, they have agreed to like put sacrificial teens into a house to feed him. That's a crazy plot, but the crazier thing is, exactly how was this treaty reached? Yeah. I would like to see that fucking...
My client, the Hornswoggle.
Yeah, right. That what that meeting of the minds look like.
He lays open Shaggy.
Oh, Shaggy. Good Lord.
Rips his gut open, which fortunately for Shaggy also severs his bonds to the tree.
But at this point, Shaggy has half a functioning leg. He has been disemboweled, and he just gets right up, boy. He just stands right up.
I tell you, he's the greatest living human.
He's unkillable.
Because he uses his newfound lack of fear of death to run over and find a machete.
And
somewhere.
And free
somewhere.
The other three.
And free the other ones.
And free them.
And then, as an American hero, he dies on Irish soil, fighting for our freedom by... I guess the Hornswoggle just like... What does the Hornswoggle do? His death is one of the non-explicit deaths in the movie.
Yeah.
He could have been tickled to death.
And trust me, this movie cannot afford to lose them. They did not have, like, cool deaths to spare.
So they get off. The other three take off running. Jen's going... Blah, 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 because her, you know, her tongue.
Yeah.
And Sophie... out of nowhere, turns into Buffy, the vampire slayer.
For 30 seconds.
A completely incompetent Buffy, the vampire slayer.
We're not going to run away. We're going to kill it.
It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
And so the two of them, they run, and Jenny's so freaked out, they tell her to hide under the cabin.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be...
You'll be the only one outside.
Yeah, she'll be the only one outside. This is... Seriously, don't watch this fucking movie for reasons that we'll cover in our final scores. do watch the 5 minutes that begins with her saying, we're going to kill it. And the 5 minutes that follows that are the only good 5 minutes in the movie.
First,
you have this insane plot line where Jenny is so scared to be in the house, so they're going to kill the leprechaun. She's going to sit outside. Like,
well, it's because she loves the leprechaun at that point. By that point, she was not a big fan of David. Oh my God, Jenny and Hornswoggle. This whole thing, they were in cahoots to get David killed because they wanted to run off.
She would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for Sophie.
If it wasn't for Sophie and Ben, who, holy shit, you guys.
So the plan is they're going to lure the Hornswoggle back into the fireplace, right? And then Jenny's going to come up and lock it behind him. But she apparently can't wait 30 more seconds for some kind of signal. Or something. Or the Hornswoggle. It's also never clear in this movie whether the Hornswoggle is just like a mad monster or like a criminal genius. But in this moment, it all becomes clear.
Because they're positioned with their axe and their pipe, I guess, just on the inside of the cabin, on the other side of the secret entrance from the fireplace. And then Sophie, our brand new branded hero, the one that's now Buffy, they're waiting and waiting. And so sure enough, a head pops out from under the fireplace and they bury an axe in it.
And it's Jenny.
It's Jenny. Yeah.
I realized it before it happened.
It's not shown exactly how the Hornswoggle manages this. It's not shown exactly how the Hornswoggle so perfect. It's almost like she was on like rollers. Like she was on
cast. Like she's been working underneath a car.
You do have an amazing shot after they do this of her with the axe buried in her head, and it's sort of in the background as the two surviving leads are still like parsing this situation. You see Jenny with the axe just like smoothly scoop back into the fireplace. Like Hornswoggle is like, yep, your work here is an excellent job.
They bought it. Come with me, darling.
But Sophie, who was a complete wimp, was in a superhero for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, and then she's like, I'm sorry, I've been an idiot.
Then she's shattered again.
Okay, I do have to say, so they escape and they get to a car, okay? I don't think it has keys. Because things start to get patchy this way. They get to a car. The first thing out of Sophie's mouth after she and her dipshit boyfriend bury an axe in their dear friend's head, literally 30 seconds of movie time later, the first thing out of Sophie's mouth is, why did you leave me when we were running away from the leprechaun earlier?
Well, yeah, then she decides to work on the commitment issue.
Hey, we just snuffed out a human existence. That's not like...
Why do I feel so alive?
Yeah, exactly. That's not on the conversational table.
They really bounce back quickly.
Yeah.
They get in this truck, and they have this little confrontation where at least Ben, the only character we see out of Ben is, shut up! What? I came back. And then she makes... When they can't find the keys, she makes this gigantic leap of logic that the keys have to be on impaled Ian, 30 feet away in a shed, a character that they didn't know was impaled. They didn't know was dead.
Did not know his relationship to the truck. They did not know this is Ian's truck. He'll have the keys.
And she just says,
that's Ian Jenkins over there. He's a teacher at the local school.
Yeah. So they come up with this plan. Question mark, where they were just going to get out of the car at the same time and just run and just, like, I guess flip a coin to see who the leprechaun's going to eviscerate. Spoiler alert, it's Ben.
Huge flaw in their plan, which was Ben was supposed to distract the leprechaun, except the leprechaun can't see Ben because he barely exists.
Yeah. Right.
So and he's a really bad distraction.
The leprechaun who can bash in the metal roof of the truck but can't break the windshield.
Oh, my God. Yeah. There's so many... There are like 6 or 7 shots. There are 6 or 7 sequences where the Hornswoggle is trying to punch in the windshield. It's a very, very specific activity for the Hornswoggle to continue to attempt to do and mysteriously just fail every single time. Hornswoggles are allergic to beds and windshields.
We missed, by the way, crying son and mean dad had a run-in of sorts where he helped them escape by pulling a gun on his dad, and then his dad sort of like...
Oh, no, this comes later.
No, that's later, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and break it down now that we've dipped into it.
Don't we have the... In the attic scene here?
Well, we can't skip Ben.
Yeah, okay.
So, oh, yeah.
No, we should fucking skip Ben. Skip how Ben gets
Let me run through it real quick.
Okay.
So Sophie does a shitty job of finding the keys. They do not return to the truck because they're surprised to see the Hornswoggles there. So they run for the cabin. They get in the cabin. They run through the farmhouse. At one point, the Hornswoggle just runs in, looks at them, and they're like, yeah, and they get inside. And so they go running, and they fail to realize how doors work. So they lock one door, leaving one wide open. Hornswoggle grabs Ben, and he looks at Sophie and goes, run or go or whatever. Hornswoggle drags Ben back into another room, rips his spine out.
Thereby fulfilling the prophecy that he was spineless.
Yeah, he wasn't now literally.
You could see the director and the writer being very smug about that
moment.
And he's
got the biggest ass spine.
Oh, my God.
Huge
spine.
It's like a leg.
Sydney pointed out to me that if you have like a spine like that you're using to like display, if you have like a model one, that it has this metal thing on the end where you use to hang it up, and she, in the one scene when they show Ben's spine pulled out,
no.
She pointed there and she said, "You see that metal thing at the end of his spine?" I was like, "Yeah." She said, "Yeah, that's the hook they use to put those on display." They probably could have removed that.
Well, that might answer my question. Maybe the hook was gold, because why did he pull Ben's spine?
Why did he do it?
Yeah.
Why? I thought he was only motivated by gold.
Yeah.
So we should touch on the Hornswoggle's number one supernatural ability. He has predator vision, right? He's got predator vision, but as far as I can tell, everything is gold, so he's seeing gold. But he also sees all human outlines as gold. Is it?
And handprints.
And handprints is gold. Is everyone in Ireland just injected with gold? Do they have gold in their blood? Like, as soon as you step on Irish soil, you are part gold, and that's how you get tracked?
We're at 48 minutes. Finish.
Okay, well, that's easy, because then they go into the attic and nothing happens for 10 fucking minutes.
It happens, but once again, we see the ineptitude of the shotgun, because Crying Boy fires off about 8 shots
in a 10 by 10 room
and can't hit the leprechaun.
He's using the auto shotgun power weapon from GoldenEye 007 with the infinite ammo cheat on. Somehow misses the leprechaun. Nothing happens in the attic.
Then Dad goes falling down the steps.
Dad finds them, and then Crying Son turns his gun on his dad and does the most acting. I imagine the other actors in the movie were really pissed off at Redhead Donald Logue at this point in the film, because he acted 100 times harder than anybody else in the movie,
and he used up all the acting.
I bet he's the only person in the movie who is acting. And they talked to him after the shoot, and were like, "Hey, man, we're all just trying to like get by. We're all just trying to like do a job
quit
here.
Acting.
Hey, did you know that this is a WWE Studios production? And like,
I have a douche commercial later on this afternoon, and I really need to like fucking save my
energy for it. Hornswoggle looks right at him, and then turns and goes and kills Dad.
Yeah.
Because he hates his dad. So while he's eating Hamish, the Hornswoggle is also outside attacking the truck.
Yeah.
Simultaneously. It happens within 2 seconds of each other in movie time. So she gets to the truck, right, with the keys, starts the truck. What? The leprechaun's on the back of the truck.
Still having trouble without a windshield, though. Still cannot penetrate.
Having some real windshield trouble. She's driving. She buckles her seatbelt.
It's a PSA for seatbelts.
Yeah.
She seems to slam on the brakes or hit a ditch or something. Hornswoggle goes flying.
Well, that would have cost too much special effects, Travi.
She hits the invisible barrier that she keeps tripping over and over.
So she starts running. She runs so hard it becomes daytime. She's running.
She runs so hard she rotates the earth to the point of day.
And she gets to the cemetery from the opening. What? Connection. She finds the bag full of gold.
She trips over a bag of gold.
Honestly, guys, if you know the plot, like, remember the plot that I told you that is the reason why they're doing all this shit? The idea that someone would have a bag of gold doubloons is, like, not even part of the thing in the thing. Like, it makes no sense in the context of the plot. Like, it wasn't, like, a key to the mystery this whole time. There are crazy gold coins in this person's bag for no reason, because it was a mining town. Like, they just mined the gold out of the thing. There's no...
Well, they were returning those to a museum.
Yeah, these belong in a museum.
And thank God nobody looked where all the grave markers were.
Yeah.
So she trips over it. All of a sudden, there's Hornswoggle up in her face. She throws the gold doubloons up in the air, grabs a conveniently placed machete, and kills Hornswoggle.
Wait. You can't now wait.
After
this whole movie was written around this single line, they came up with this line and they're like, "Fuck yeah, we don't need to write anything else, guys. This is it.
Griffin,
this is the line we're going to hang the rest of the movie on."
Griffin, I don't mean to take away from you, but that line is actually stolen from the earlier Leprechaun
From the
movies.
First Leprechaun movie. And the line is, "Fuck you, Lucky Charms."
If it was delivered like that, maybe. "Fuck you, Lucky Charms." No, it was, "Fuck you, Lucky Charms." Like, it was the worst. "Fuck you, Lucky Charms." Like, it was the worst. It was the worst.
And then aside from mattresses and windshields, apparently the Hornswoggle's only weakness is a machete to the neck. Like, all I could think is, has nobody just tried killing it?
Why hasn't anybody tried to kill him in all these years?
These guys have a foolproof plan for luring this piece of shit into a house. They have a plan for that.
They have shotguns.
Yeah, they have shotguns. They have a plan for luring him into their house. They can lock it from the outside. There's no other exit. It is insane to me that they have not burned this fucker to the ground
yet. Instead, they've killed what seems to be hundreds of 20-somethings.
Yeah, so many 20-somethings. So anyway,
she runs past the barrier stones, then it pans out, and then you see a bunch of shapes moving in the wheat as if to say, there's a whole family of Hornswoggles.
Well, you hear
a murder of Hornswoggles.
And here
I don't think you see the shapes. I was looking. You hear the noise, and it's definitely implied.
I didn't see any shapes moving. I saw a few trails in the grass.
Yeah. We've been recapping this movie for 50 minutes, okay? The movie itself takes approximately 28 minutes longer.
Well, we did a bad job then.
But no, here's the thing. It's a 78-minute movie.
I thought it was 90.
No, my friend. You think it's 90 because they made this credits?
It's a 78-minute movie, and then there's 13 minutes
of credits.
13 minutes of credits.
Because between every card of credits, there's like a 5-second shot of just like the set.
The props table.
Yeah.
In the basement.
Like you remember how we were saying it's so slow and it's all boring? They were just trying to get to 78 minutes because they were like, listen, I can stretch the credits out for 13 minutes max.
I timed it. There are 13 minutes, and they will throw up three cast members or crew members, and then this loving, lingering, moving shot over weapons or something that was in that basement.
A toilet.
Yeah. Okay.
And I want to stress that the whole time I was watching this movie, it felt like the prologue to another movie. And I guess it is because
it's the origins.
But this felt like what should have been that 1-minute long scene at the beginning of the movie before the interesting characters with dynamic personalities showed
up. Also, the origins thing is insane.
Right.
Because
it's not.
The next movie is like, and then he became fucking super cool and rad.
Right.
And dressed in sweet shit and said dope
things. His great-great-grandson who immigrated to America and was super cool.
It is the most generic, like, to take this franchise, which is like one of the best like comedy horror movies. Fucking Leprechaun 4 in space is the craziest movie. In the beginning of that movie, somebody kills the leprechaun, but he becomes a ghost, and then somebody pees on his corpse, and he travels up the pee stream and infects somebody's dick. That's
I've never watched a Leprechaun movie, and instantly, as soon as I was done, I went and watched the trailers for, because I'd sort of like, they'd been on at parties or whatever, but I never sat down and watched one. And I had more fun watching one trailer for one actual Leprechaun movie than I did in this entire time.
Okay, so let's rate the movie. The categories are totally scarifying, totally snorifying, or frighteningly funny.
It's snorting.
Spookily good bad.
Spookily good bad.
Okay.
That's one of the most common ones.
Totally scarifying. Totally scarifying. I'm going to give this movie, is one wormy boner good or bad?
I think it's bad.
It's the worst, right? It's totally snorifying. It's a terrible movie.
It's fucking terrible. It is a joyless, like anything that can be good in a horror movie, because there are lots of ways that a horror movie can be good, just isn't. Literally none of that is present.
The only thing quality about it is the opening aerial sequence where they go zoom. It looks like one of those PBS specials where they fly over Ireland.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. We actually do need to give ratings now. So my rating is, I'm going to give, I guess it's totally snorifying,
yeah,
I guess.
Totally,
I think one
snorifying.
Wormy boner is good, bad. Okay, so I'm going to say totally snorifying. I don't watch a lot of bad movies because I'm like careful, I guess, and I read reviews before. So I don't know if a lot of bad movies like this. It is nothing. There's that one 5-minute sequence that I mentioned that's worth watching. The rest of it is just
There are no reveals.
There are no twists.
Wait, Dad, what's your rating? Totally scarifying, totally snorifying, or one wormy boner?
If it's not
totally snorifying,
yeah,
let me add one last thing.
Okay.
The people who wrote this movie, the people involved with this movie, should be burned at the stake.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And then have their ashes pissed on.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow, but then they can travel up the piss to infect the dick.
Oh, that's right.
It's totally snorifying. It's nothing. It's bad. It's nothing. It's not even bad.
Except for the 5 minutes of Whoops-a-Daisy Murder.
That's fun.
That's pretty okay.
That's pretty fun.
But
the rest of it is.
You can tell what the intention was, like, almost the entire time, and the intention was, let's rip off. Like, there's the look under the door and see something moving thing from Signs. Like, the intention is so obvious, but they fucking drop the ball. Like, in order for a movie to be truly bad and enjoyable, I feel like it has to be completely inscrutable what they were going for, but it's just sort of like...
Well, it also needs to be sincere, and nothing about this movie felt sincere.
That 78-minute running time tells you everything you need to know. Let's just get to the end, guys. Let's just get something...
It's time for letters.
Time for letters. Going to letters. He sings a song every time, right?
Yeah, just it's make different up a song, but
it's not letters. It's not we got letters. We get your letters every day. Mailbag here today. Reach right in and pull one out. It's letters what was that today.
What was that?
That's an old jingle.
Sing
that fucking ruled.
I need That's you to sing to me an answer for what that squish sound was in the middle.
That was, I was trying to rip open an envelope.
Sing it to me.
Reach right in and pull one out.
Okay. Justin, read a letter.
Smooth as butter. So dancing. What was that?
Sorry, that's the Flophouse house cat. I would have been disappointed if we went the whole episode and he didn't stop by. We told him that we were recording, and
it's more accurate to.
I can get my cat and just sort of squeeze him into the microphone and see what sounds come out.
That's unnecessary.
Letters.
All right, let's rip them. And these are specifically, all of these are addressed to the actual host of this show, so this should be interesting. To my three dear Floppatrons, on your last episode, where much of the discussion was bafflingly focused on civet coffee, and during what appeared to be one of your typically pointless diversions, so the truths of the universe were revealed. I've always wondered why George Clooney, when searching for the motivation for his well-groomed man enjoying hot beverage in the Nespresso advertisement, chose the expression acting classes classify as turbo smirk bordering on douchebag. What is so inherently amusing about hot but not boiling water being forced through roasted beans to create an intense flavor experience? It's also clear to me now. On the cutting room floor must be scene after scene of Clooney expectorating coffee from a small squirrel's anus by vigorously jumping on his tail up and down. So the look Clooney deploys is clearly, I've just been forcing an espresso out of a squirrel's ass, and it's fucking hilarious. Thank you so much for solving a mystery as old as time itself. Lisa, last name withheld, from Bristol, United Kingdom.
What? What does any of that mean?
I don't know what any of that means.
I mean, typically our MO is to answer questions. So there was no question there. That was just sort of a celebration.
Yeah. And you knew we were going to be here, and you still wrote that inscrutable email. I just feel like you're not taking advantage of the personalities that you have here in front of you.
Just because you wanted to take advantage of saying squirrel's anus.
Yeah, let's drop this one. This one's going to be a club banger.
Dropped it like it's hot.
Thanks, Dad. I have a question. A few months ago, I was at the opening night of Fast and the Furious 7. I've seen every F and F movie in the theaters, by the way, because I'm winning at life. The typical opening night audience consists of mostly teenage boys laughing and clapping and shouting at the screen, as I believe the movies were intended to be seen. As you know, before the 7th movie is finished filming, Paul Walker died. At the end of the movie, spoiler alert, his character is still alive, but they've basically retired him, and Vin Diesel narrates a very heartfelt and gravelly voice send-off to the character, by extension the actor. It's actually quite touching. When the credits rolled, I noticed that every boy there who had been hooting and hollering throughout the movie was... getting up and leaving very quickly and manfully wiping their eyes. I've never seen so many teenagers simultaneously trying to hide their tears, and it was awesome. My question is, have any of you experienced a similarly memorable audience moment at a movie? It can be funny, sad, disgusting, or all three. And did your audience affect your enjoyment of the movie? Keep on flopping. Mary, last name withheld. I
have one. It's one of my favorite movie theater stories to tell. We went to see the Johnny Depp remake of Willy Wonka. And it is not a good movie, so we were not very interested. But when Johnny Depp offers the candy, you know, factory to Charlie Bucket, a little kid about five rows in front of us jumped to his feet, pointed at the screen, and yelled, "I knew it!"
That's
one
good.
Of my favorite moments I've ever seen.
Specifically, Fast and the Furious 7. I cried a lot. I cried. I don't have any tears left in me still to this day because of how much I cried at the end of that movie. And I was weirdly excited in that moment where Vin Diesel was giving that monologue and everybody's like saying goodbye to CGI Paul Walker. And I was just crying so hard because I had this thought. I was there seeing it with friends, and I had this thought of like, oh boy, when the lights come up, me and my friends are all going to look at each other crying in this vulnerable place, and we're going to be so much closer as friends. And the lights came up, dry. Perfectly dry, stone-faced, heartless monsters. I cried. I think they channeled all their tears into me because I so fiercely
was
I crying.
You were the conduit. You carried that crossbone. Not in a movie theater, but I was dating a girl, and I watched a film with her family. It was a beloved 80s sitcom classic. And at the end of the film, the credits began to roll, and I noticed that her mother had tears in her eyes. And she said, completely stone-faced to me, "I just feel like everybody should have an Uncle Buck."
fucking the best.
Oh my God, that's right, very good.
I got one on Justin. It's not that funny. We went and saw.
We'll crank it up, my man.
We went and saw Iron Giant.
Oh my God.
We went and saw Iron Giant, and it got to the end of the movie, and he just Superman.
Spoiler alert.
And Justin and I are, really, the waterworks are flowing, the lights come up, and Justin's, your mom turns to us and went, it didn't affect her at all.
Yeah, no, it's a cartoon robot.
Sure. How do you not feel that? Okay.
We need to start wrapping up. Do you guys have any movie recommendations? Because the only movie I've watched in the last, month was Speed. And I'll go ahead and recommend it, because that movie fucking rules. We're doing a Keanu film series with my friends here in Austin. We did Point Break and then Speed. And I think Speed is the superior film out of the two, which may be heresy to say. But it's good. It's got Keanu Reeves in it. It's got Sandra Bullock. They have to drive a bus real fast.
I watched an excellent documentary called An Honest Liar about James Randi. It has a really insane arc. Like, there's an actual... It starts out more of like a career retrospective. And then in the last third, it has not just an arc, but an arc that both sort of challenges and highlights the themes of truth and the importance of truth telling that James Randi has been highlighting for the entire film.
If you don't know who he is, he's a magician who's also a professional sort of debunker. Houdini, but then something happens at the end of the movie that is you could not write it. I actually had some ethical concerns with that movie because there's explicitly a scene where he says, you cannot include this in the documentary. You cannot include this in the documentary, and they included it in the documentary.
Now, they do say in the credits that he gave permission to use all the footage. So,
what about you, Trav?
I have come to the realization recently that there may be people in the world who have not watched Blazing Saddles, which is my favorite movie in the world, and I just watched it on Tuesday. So if you haven't watched Blazing Saddles, it is, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest comedy movie ever made, so you should go watch it.
Well, I got one. We were flying back from L.A., and Justin watched The Taking of Pelham 123, the original version with Robert Shaw and Walter Matthau, and it blew him away. I watched it sitting next to him. He had the little screen in the seat in front of him. I couldn't hear the dialogue. And I watched it and remembered how fantastic a movie it is.
The ironic thing about that is I watched that because Elliot Kalin said that it was the one movie. If he could only watch one movie, that's the movie that he would watch. So that's why I watched it, that movie. So it's a full circle of life. Let's get out of here. Let's do some quick promos. I'm going to be doing the next one in my screening series at the 92Y Tribeca. I'm showing Two for the Bronx. It's a Frank Capra classic. I'm going to be joined by Al Madrigal for that, and I hope you all can come out.
Me and Tim League are kicking off a new film series here at the Alamo Drafthouse, The Ritz, of course, on 6. We're going to be streaming and screaming. It's a new series we're calling Streaming and Screaming, and we're going to be showing some old 88mm reels of silent movies, but we dubbed sound into them, so you're really going to enjoy this.
And I just won an Emmy for my writing on the Daily Show.
Okay, good.
And I have a cheese sandwich with horseradish that's screaming
my name. Oh, my God.
Everybody, if you enjoyed this, which you probably didn't because we're different from the other people, and you miss the other people, you should go listen to the Adventure Zone, our Dungeons & Dragons podcast that we're usually on, that they are currently hosting.
Also,
so go check out the Adventure Zone.
If you did enjoy us, we have another podcast called My Brother Me. That's an advice show that we do without our dad, so it gets blue. And you can listen to that as well. I just want to say quickly before we wrap here, Flophouse is genuinely one of my favorite podcasts on the planet that I've been mainlining for the past few months. And to get to actually record one and sort of sit in for those guys is I don't use this word loosely. It has been a genuine honor.
Yeah.
So I thank you. And, so much for letting us do that.
But what I will say is if we had to do this every 2 weeks and we had to watch a Leprechaun Origins style movie every 2 weeks, I would cut my head off and I would throw it in the ocean.
Yeah, that's falling on our sword for him.
It was miserable. Oh, fuck.
Happy Shocktober. I have been Griffin McElroy.
I have been Travis McElroy.
I have been Clint McElroy.
You just stared at me like, what do I do now?
Well, I didn't know the order.
Fuck, dude. I said I'd go last and you know your name.
You just said fuck to your father.
I am and will remain to be, for the foreseeable future, Justin McElroy. Thanks for watching, everyone. This is a show. No, it's a podcast. You listened. Fuck.
Gotcha.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Oh, hey there, everybody. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a new weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are journalist Margaret Wobbler, academic, writer, and DJ Oliver Wang, digital strategist Winner Mitchell, and comedian Santina Muha.
It's an intellectual and incredibly snark-filled discussion about pop culture by five cranky Hollywood 30-somethings. No name-calling, no rudeness, just straight talk and a lot of role-play.
I'm only 30-something for another year.
Me too. And I don't tell anybody I'm 30-something.
Pop Rocket comes out every week from MaximumFun.org.